Hey, this is Blaine Cartwright.
And I'm Ryder Size.
And we're Natural Pussy. And you're listening to Mark After Dark.
To wake up and listen to the third hour of the Mad Mark After Dark show. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome back to the show the one and only Blaine Cartwright from the mighty Nashville Pussy and 9-Pound Hammer back to the program in this, the third hour.
Ready? Yeah, it's recorded, sell it.
Aw, little Taylor Bell, please, Kentucky. Here we go.
Well, I was raised on a diet of no-do, Jonas and diesel emissions. A wrinkled old man running on and on about the weather and road conditions. Same 5 miles ahead, whatever behind, wondering how I went wrong. Strange city signs sound like rhymes in a never-ending song. Just a one-horse town, no hotel or bar. Just a wax museum, dead he all stars. You don't look in the mirror, when your heart's made. Stranded outside Tater Knot with a Jugs magazine. Sitting inside a topless joint in the music row. Watch a fat girl strip to Molly Hatchet songs. Hope stretch marks don't show. I spent my last dime on a watered down drink. I was headed out toward the door. For a kick to sell, going in, headed back for more. Just a one horse town, no hotel or bar. Just a wax museum, but dead he all stars. You don't look in the mirror when your heart is made. Stranded outside Tater Knot with the Jugs. Magazine.
that point, 9 Pound Hammer seemed to reunite it and play the introduction for the Adult Swim cartoon, 12-Ounce Mouse. You have also recently recorded with them again and released Sex, Drugs, and Bill Monroe in 2007, Country Classics in 2009, and most recently, I mean, this isn't released yet, but Bluegrass Conspiracy. Tell me what it is.
Yeah, it's great.
What is the difference to working with 9 Pound Hammer these days to back in the day?
Oh, God, I want to get into it.
Hold on, I'm going to tell this question right here. Justin, what's the difference between working with 9 Pound Hammer these days compared to back in the day?
I figured it would be a funny... I kind of wrote that down going, Blaine's going to laugh at that, and of course you are.
Oh, God. I don't know, man. Is it possible for the world's laziest band to get lazier? Yeah, you know. You know how to get lazier than go someplace and not do anything? Just don't show up at all. No, man, it's like pulling... It's Kentucky, man, and it's like pulling teeth to get anyone to... to do anything besides Brian and maybe Earl, and it's almost pulling teeth to get anyone to do anything. And but once they're there, they can't be beat. You know, it's like, well, I should just get other people to do this. I'll do a band with this guy. Well, then, but the end result is it's not as good. And those guys are, you know, Scott's extremely creative individual and extremely intelligent. It's just been hard to get him. You know, it's hard. It's hard enough when you're a lazy punk band. Mm-hmm. We did the work what we had to do in the day that 9 Pound Hammer did, and then it got kind of like it got kind of lazier. But when we were united, we were kind of gung ho. And now the studio is in Lexington, so it's in the same town as everyone lives in, and everyone's there. They got kids, the step kids, and jobs, and or whatever. And you know, so it's hard to get everyone's schedule lined up. And no one seems to want to. It's hard to get anyone to make any kind of sacrifice and just to drive a mile down the studio. But once they get there, it's amazing. But when we first started to do the record, it's been 2 years since it started, man. Years, man, since we started recording that record. I was like, I used to make little 1 minute movies. On my phone to send back to my family and Ryder's family and whatever, you know, girl or whatever, you know, whatever friends we have, you know, they're interested and just show like what goes on in our lives, you know, and that's just my relatives because they were just show them what we got, you know, what is actually working. So I showed up for the 9 Pound Hammer first day of Bluegrass Conspiracy, and I was all excited. I made a little 1 minute movie, the studio, and this is what's going to happen. And it took so long to get everything done that I just like, there's no way I'm going to document how slow and lazy these people are and to get such amazing results because people will think that, oh, you don't have to do shit and magically happen. Now the record's great, but I'd write the music 8 out of 10 fucking songs. Which is no big deal, but and Scott came in and kicked ass on the vocals. He sounds way better. He lost a lot of weight. He had been in rehab and jail and stuff. So he had a bunch of shit go on. So he came back full throttle. I think he's probably it's hard to say he sounds better than ever, but he sounds close enough that you can almost say that because I mean it's hard to beat the guy like 1990 and stuff, you know, he kind of was the whole band. We've also got Earl plays guitar on it too, so we got 2 guitars on it. But still real simple, goofy songs about food and girls and shit like that. And a couple of kind of formalistic things too, you know, like Scott writes, but Scott wrote a bunch of good lyrics and I did too. And it's really, really good.
I can't wait to hear it. I mean, I've heard the other ones.
It took a year I was going there in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
It's just too easy because we were going there. I was going to the studio and hanging out. So anyway,
I mean, Country Classics. I like that one a lot. That one, you know, it was great.
That one also took a year and a half. I think Ryder's on like 10 tracks of that.
Yeah, I know.
Or something. Yeah. So that one took like about a year and a half, too. Yeah. I don't know, man. Yeah, there's 9 Pound Hammer records. Like, they take like
take like about 7 times as long as Nashville Pussy Records to make.
Because you're more motivated, yeah. I guess, with Nashville.
No, we just get it done. We're not Nashville Pussy. We will be there for like a. It's our job, you know. It's our job, and if you know, and to be fair, if it was the only job that Downtown Hammer guys had, then I'm sure it'd be different. But they have to have their regular job. Mm-hmm. They got to come to the studio. So I mean, you know, it's a little different. But I'm really happy with the results. The results are really good, and Scott sounds, like I said, Scott sounds better because he was we had to work around, and he was so pilled out for. He was during when he Kentucky Breakdown, when he was doing pills, it was still at the stage where he would get fucked up and it'd be kind of funny. I mean, not funny, but just like, oh god, just kind of like, it wasn't like. And by the time we did Sex, Drugs, Bill Monroe, and then Country Classics, it was bad. He would do like a scratch vocal and like for the song, and he'd be like so slurring and stuff and so behind the beat, we had to all turn him out in our mixes and stuff. So, you know, this is the way different. He's totally on it. He's totally on it. He's not lagging behind. He's pushing the songs. And it's like really, really good. It sounds great too. We did in Kentucky where we did up the dosage and, as far as like all the playing on it's better and it's still hard and still fast and it sounds heavy and stuff. It's warmer sounding, and drums sound better than any of the drums we've had so far too.
Yeah, mama's doing math.
Well, in 2009, the band recorded and released From Hell to Texas, which was recorded at Willie Nelson's studio in Texas, where most of the Waylon and Willie albums were recorded back in 77, 78, and 81 and 82. Did the history of this legendary studio inspire any of the material recorded, or did it give you any ideas for songs?
I think we are, the songs were already done before we got there, because Daniel likes it like that. We any kind of 80%. Yeah, most of the creative stuff was taking place here in Atlanta before we got to Willie's. Willie's was not really a place you could really improvise and shit, because we're all separated. You know, Jeremy was in one room, and it was kind of like a 70s recording place. It was kind of dead sounding. And after that, we've gone back to Ryder and Jeremy need to be in, you know, Ryder, whoever playing drums, and need to be in the same room. Because they feed off each other, and it wasn't quite the same. And there's something about the sound and that I didn't like. Once we got through, we just jumped at the chance to be at Willie's place, and we didn't really do much research to see how much rock records were recorded there. And it wasn't a whole lot, but that was the last time we had a closed in drum room, because we now say if you listen to the rest of our other stuff is like High as Hell and Say Something Nasty, drums are in the same room as we're all in one, drums are in one big room, we all sit and play together.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with the Dosage too. So, but I think lyric wise, you know, I mean, I remember I had, there's a picture of me with Willie, like a picture of, no, it's a picture of, I had some weed, and I had no way to smoke it, and I asked the guys in the studio if they had a pipe, and they go, I'm sure Willie's got a bong in his office, and I was like, are you kidding me? And so they went and got Willie Nelson's bong for me. I was like, he didn't give a shit, and I was like, okay, and so there's a picture, I was drinking Boone's Farm at the time, which is like, doesn't have a lot of alcohol on it. It's mostly sugar. It's like, it's not even like beer. It's not even a wine. It's just like sort of like a Boone's Farm. It's like some cheap wine. It's like soda almost.
Mm-hmm.
I was drinking that, and there's a picture of me in this lime green Willie Nelson's bong and all these balls of Boone's Farm lined up. And I had this whole huge area, like two rooms. When you come in the studio, there's these two rooms that were shut off and that little balcony and everything, and that's where I wrote lyrics. And I would sit there and listen to the playbacks on a jam box that we had from earlier, and I would just sit there and write and just get high and write until I was necessary for me to be in another room. And Ryder played almost all the guitars on that one. From Hell in Texas.
Yeah.
Almost all of them. Yeah, she played, I think I played one solo. I think, as far as rhythm track, I think I laid a couple rhythm tracks. But I think mostly it's her playing on top of her. And that was the first one I was like, well, I want it, you know, I want to write some songs. If you're like a singer, like Bon Scott, you put words in a different place than you do if you have a guitar in your hands. Especially if you're kind of a punk rock background like me, you tend to like strum like and sing with the same rhythm, and that it starts to become very predictable. And I was like, well, I want to actually try to see if I can write some songs without having to play. And so Daniel played guitar during the practice sessions. I wrote a lot of the songs, but Daniel played guitar some of the practice sessions, and then I would come up with the phrasing. I was like, you know, like this. I would say a syllable. I'd do like Bruce Springsteen. I heard Bruce Springsteen did this, and that's what I started doing. It's like, so I would just like make sounds like and see what fit. And then I'd go back and listen to that, and I'd put words to it.
Wow.
And what I'm saying, yeah. So that was I like doing that. I like doing that a lot. So
But yeah, so that was the first time that Roger played mostly guitars, and it worked out well. We thought it was going to sound huge because we sounded huge. We really had been on the road for a while, and we were all really, really into the band, and we all hung out together, and it was back to being a family, a gang again. That was with Karen, and so it was back to being a, and she was probably the craziest person we ever had in the band, but I mean, I don't think she's even close. She's not. So it's like, but it was good crazy, not Corey crazy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was just enough crazy.
Going to die in a rock and roll band. Always sounded like a hell of a plan. To hell from Texas in a beat up van. Why can't you understand? Mama said, put 'em around your brain. So I gotta get out of here before I go insane. Jody Hardy, back in the road, can't even say goodbye. None you say can't keep me here. Don't even try. Jody Hardy, back in the road, that's where I'm gonna stay. Staying home. If I don't rock soon, I'm gonna die.
2011, you formed the Kentucky Bridge Burners and released a rock and roll gospel album simply entitled Hail Jesus. The band does a Black Oak, Arkansas cover called Keep the Faith. What inspired you to form this band and record an album's worth of material like that?
Well, I was wanting to do a gospel record for a long time. I just being from the South and just thought it was my birthright to do that. And I had done a tour of a downtown Hammer where Scott couldn't make it for his wife got pregnant and everything. And instead of canceling, I was asked to sing, and I had been asked before when we didn't, and I always hated. I said no fucking way. But this time I was like, this is cool. And I was like, fuck it. I'm going to try to do this. So I did that. And it was kind of, and when we would veer off from the Hammer stuff, when we play like Ain't Living Long Like This or something like that, the band was great. I mean, I was like, so it was good. I was watching this fucking Dylan documentary that Scorsese did too. And I was just like, man, it'd be cool just to have, you know, a band that was built around, you know, more so like sort of like a solo thing. So I had planned on having the gospel record come out as Wayne Cartwright, you know, and everything. But I just, you know, those other guys, everyone in the band was so fucking good. And we recorded it. I was like, we got to have a band name. I think we jokingly said, I said Kentucky Bridge Burners, and everyone laughed. So we decided to make it a Kentucky Bridge Burners record. But that thing was great because, I don't know, it was like recording for the hell of it. I mean, no one was expecting it. No one was asking for it. No one was like, it was something that there was like a labor of love for me. It was like, it wasn't like I wasn't obligated contractually to do anything. It was just like everything. All the other records we do, I think we want to do what we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this was like something that got funded by me and Ryder basically. And, you know, just, we went in and to the studio in Kentucky, the one in Lexington with Brian, and we were very familiar with everything there, and we did it. We did it in 4 days. I mean, it was like, I think we practiced. I practiced the songs with Earl and Rob,
mm-hmm.
that I'd written, because I had wanted to just do gospel covers, but I was going through gospel songs, and I was like, man, they've either been done to death, or the old R&B gospel songs are so just based around vocals that you can't, they kind of stay in the same note, and they just have like a lot of preaching and screaming, which sounds great, but it was really hard to like put that into like a rock and roll setting. And so I ended up having to write, I was like, well, you know, I have to write my own gospel songs. So I wrote maybe like half the record and the other half's covers. And, I don't know. It came together really, 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 really nice, man. I was like, I mean, that's probably something maybe I'm most proud of. You know, and Ryder came in and played the guitar on a lot of it, and very, very cool organ, and that kind of and sang and stuff like that. So it was us just having fun in the studio, and just using that gospel record that's used to like just have fun, and you can tell. And because, like, even like one of the songs on there is that, like, kind of a we all know what Jesus did, but we all know what Jesus did, but tell me, what did you do? And I wrote that as like kind of a soul gospel song. And you know, I realized that we're not going to have a choir in there, it's just us, you know. And so, we were in the lounge, and someone was looking at watching Van Halen, and we were sitting watching at the US Festival. And I was like, well, I just like, hey, but tomorrow, okay. This song that I showed you guys, it's going to be a Van Halen song tomorrow. So we're going to do a shuffle and then they'll kick drum. And so we had, you know, and everyone's like, cool. So everyone's just so talented. It's, you know, I mean, it was Ryder and Earl and Rob Holzman from Hammer, and he's been playing with us too. And Earl and his Hammer and Ryder and Todd, who's probably the best bass player on the planet. I mean, just he's from Kentucky and he works full time job as a chef. I don't think he's doing something with like school lunches now or something for the county, but it's hard to pin that guy down. But when he's there, he's fucking great. And, and everyone just, I mean, they got in there and jammed, and, like that song and a couple other songs too,
we didn't have a set arrangement or anything. We were kind of winging it as much as possible. And when you wing it, you got to have, when you wing it or kind of make things up on, at the last moment, you got to have everybody who's comfortable with doing that. Otherwise, it goes, people don't, they'll fuck up. And so everyone there was like, good with like, hey, yeah, let's do that and be able to just to do it immediately. And it was such good musicians. So it was cool. It was, I'd be singing and I would like point to, you know, when the solo goes and how long and stuff. And you'd play this one now and we would just keep the take. And it was great. It was great. It was,
How did you come up doing? I mean, I know Nashville Pussy's done Black Oak, Arkansas. I mean, you've done Hot Rod with years ago.
I was scouring the rock. I was so in need of material for the thing. Mm-hmm. Only I got 9 songs on it. Then the last one's Amazing Grace with Ryder playing Oregon, and we just called it like, you know, I called it something else. And I mean, so we barely made it to where it's the actual record. So I was scouring the rock and roll archives for any song that can be Christian and have that message. And sometimes some of them I didn't want, if they were being ironic or talking about religion as a whole or talking about, you know, being about any kind of criticism of religion or being you know, smart ass, and I didn't want any of that. I wanted something that was like very genuine, that was like, you know, like about pious, you know, just you know, we wanted to have reverence for the material, like for the mm-hmm. subject matter, you know. Do we want to have have the reverent show and like, you know, so that was one of them. And, you know, I even went to Dylan's like gospel records. I think I had one of them called Solid Rock that was going to be on there if we didn't get, you know, but I luckily found Keep the Faith, and man, that one was hard to figure out. It wasn't easy, man. They got a bunch of stuff going on in those songs. And I think we cut like 7 choruses off the end. they say to Keep the Faith. I think we do 3 or 4 and they do 7. And we played that live in Bridgeburners. It was hard to play, man. It ain't easy. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you think these people are like rednecks and dumb until you try to figure their songs out.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, yeah, but Black Oak, those songs are hard.
Yeah, they got a bunch of, sometimes they have some weird little quirky things in them, or mm-hmm. I have 3 guitars too and stuff. 3 guitar players all trying to get their licks in, so. You know, it can get a little, ours is less busy than that, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But.
Please keep the faith. Please.
The Up to Dosage album was released in January of 2014. Yet again, it seemed like another stylistic change occurred to some degree, adding mandolin and piano to certain songs. Tell me how this idea for the album came to be.
Well, we got Roderick could play mandolin, so we always have a song like Lazy Jesus, or on what song gets I think we didn't. I think we need a novelty song on that. I don't call them novelty songs, but there's always it's always like kind of break it up a little bit and have like if you have enough songs, if you have 13 songs on their record, you're gonna have a song with mandolin and stuff. If you don't, then it's like we had 13 really strong songs on there, so we had like Let's Get On for the Drugs We're Off, and we tried that doing that hard rock, and it was better off like making it Stonesy, making it cool. Because we tried it, we're going to try to play it live on tour, and it just doesn't seem to have the same energy when we play it live. It doesn't seem to have the same energy that all the rest of the songs have. It'd be different if it was a hit, but that's Ryder. Don't play guitar on that. That's Earl. We were busy at the time. We were trying to get other parts of the record together, and we got Earl Krim. He got plays with me and Hammer and Bridgeburners to come in and play a solo on the song called Spent, but he also played for the Drugs Were Off. And I said, hey man, play this. You gotta play a long solo. You play the first half like me, and then you play the first half imitate me, second half imitate Ryder. And he was pretty good at doing both. And so he played the guitar in that. And that was supposed to be kind of like a T-Rexy type thing. And so it's cool to have a couple of things like that in there to make the other songs that are the rest of them are pretty fast to make them like, Ryder plays organ. He plays piano on that.
Oh yeah.
There's an organ at the beginning of the record, and I think there's bagpipes. That bagpipe sound rather at the Pussy's Not a Dirty Word. I think there might be, there's an organ. No, there's not any organ spent. Maybe there's. Yeah. Yeah, he was asked about the mandolin. Yeah, the mandolin, the writer could play mandolin.
I heard it.
Yeah, but she played, and I like any excuse for Ryder to play piano. I like that. I mean, there's always like, you can't do it more than a couple songs of record, but if it fits, it's always good to change it up a hair.
So are you going to be consistent with that kind of thing maybe on your next record, on your next whatever it's going to be?
I don't know yet. We'll see when we get in there. So, we've got we're going to have a lot of expectations to keep rocking. I don't want to get too, I'd said something to a record company about doing a double record and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just like, hey, we said, man, everyone's doing a double record. And that's a lot of times it's like I said, Priest and Maiden and all these old bands are doing double record. And a lot of times it's just a double record is just an excuse to put a bunch of different stuff on there and fill it out and look kind of artistic. And I did some research, and all the double records that I know that are my cornerstones, like Blonde on Blonde, XL on Main Street, Physical Graffiti, The River, and London Calling, the ones I grew up with, all started out as single records, but they had so many great songs they made it a double record. So that's why that happens. You don't go and some of the stuff like the Who's Next is supposed to be like a double record, and it would like end up being just like a really good single one. So I don't know what we're gonna do. If it fits, I know people don't like come to us for that piano and stuff like that. But if it does come, if we get the opportunity to put it on there, it sounds cool, that's why I wanted to have extra songs in there. It's like, I want to give everyone their rock. I want to get everyone their money's worth of rock and roll songs if I'm going to throw a country song in there or whatever. But there's some people that really like To Rape for Cocaine or Rape for Tennessee on the last record.
Mm-hmm.
And some people like it for The Drugs Wear Off. And sometimes it's just like, well, we can do that too. And so sometimes we get jealous of seeing like other bands that, we can do, you see bands that are play country, kind of play alternative country stuff.
or you see bands that play like Stonesy stuff with the piano get big, and you're like, well, fuck, we can do that, you know, and you're just kind of like, well, you know, we get an opportunity, a song that fits it, you just kind of show off a little bit too. You're like, well, you know, we can, you know, we, because I don't think people know that Ryder can play piano and organ. And
well, if they don't know yet, they know now because of that album.
Yeah, I mean, just, and it gives a chance to, there's a dobro on that too, and it's Andy Gibson, that's, Andy Gibson's done 3 or 4 songs on country classics, and he's Hank Three's guitar player, and he just, fuck, he was so good, and he lives in Nashville, and he'll, and if we, for a price, and it's very cheap actually too, it's like, he'll, we'll send him a song, and then email it to him, you know, and these days you email him a song, the tracks, and he'll like put a, he'll just get his dobro out or whatever, or these steel guitars, like this steel guitar, pedal steel, you know, and he'll play, he'll send you a solo. He'll get out and send you five solos, and that he plays over top, and you piece it together yourself, and it just sounds amazing. It's like a whole, you know, it's like when we got Rick Richards from Satellites to play on Get Some, you know, I mean, I know we're good, but some of these older guys, they're better. They just have Rick Richards and Jordan Satellites, the older generation that really grew up with rock and roll and was really there, man. And it's only a few years older than me, but it's like that they were in bands in the '70s and stuff, man. They had to be good. I mean, it was going to be great to even like.
Well, they had to be great in the '70s.
You had to be
totally
different. They had to get any attention too. You had to just not only have a really unique style, you had to fucking be a kick ass at it too, man. And just, and there was so much competition back then too.
Mm-hmm.
And there was always, you know, there's so many competitions from, you know, everywhere, because everyone had a far. You know, it's not like now when everyone, you know, but it's like back then everyone had a fucking electric guitar. Or I mean, I think everybody I ever met, you know, I had, you know, that's my age, you know, whether they put it down or early on or later on or kept it up or whatever, everyone had one. And everyone tried to play. So you had so many people doing that, that like, something like Rick Richards, he was just like the cream of the crop. He's just, you know, the best, you know. So anyway, he played on a song called Raising Hell Again on Get Some. And he just elevated it, like, he just took it to another level, so, yeah. So anyway, so anytime we get a chance to like get another person to play something like that, and you know, that's always good too. You know, because at first I was like, no one plays on Nashville Pussy Records, but Nashville Pussy. And I was like, well, fuck, man, you get a chance to like get Rick Richards on a song, you get a chance to get Rick Richards on a song or something like that. You know, and I think From Hell of Texas had the first piano on it. If I'm not mistaken, I think there's a piano on I'm So High, you just can't hear it. It's like a,
yeah,
I think Ryder, it's like it's a few notes, it's a few high notes. Let me Ryder, the piano on I'm So High, right? It's very, it goes ding 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 ding. Yeah, there's like one, oh, yeah, $100,000 piano. I think it was, you or Daniel? It was Daniel. Daniel, okay. playing just like one hand, two fingers, I think. Yeah, like Iggy Pop, like Stooges piano, yeah. Like, yeah. So I was like, yeah, that was it. That was the first piano we could put in there. But, we got a piano and organ in the house right now. We got, we got baby electric baby grand for $800. Then, and Wurlitzer too. The Wurlitzer is not, been active. The electric baby grand's really nice. It's very, and these days you can go in the studio and rent like a $30 keyboard from like from some place. It's just like this piece of crap, you know, keyboard, and you plug it into the you know, effects in the studio, and you can make it sound like a Hammond. I'm like, exactly. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just easy. You don't have to have a Hammond organ in the studio. It'd be great if we did, but you can get that sound. So, you know, so we were like experimenting with like the right organ sound and everything. And the they yeah, at the very end of the record, Pussy's Not a Dirty Word, they have there's some bagpipes, which I think is Ryder as a bagpipe sample on a cell phone. A bagpipe app on a cell phone. And a synthesizer, yeah. Together.
Train all night. Eating corn dogs while I'm getting blowjobs, alright. Put so much in my belly and my brain, I can't feel a goddamn thing for more. Give me more, give me more. Party so much that my brain is burnt to a crisp. Now it doesn't know the difference between ain't and his. Doing lines off the ass of my best friend's girl, then drunk and shit all over the world. So more, give me more, give me more, till my head explodes more. Give me more, give me more. Got up in dosage now, right now.
Pussy, I've noticed lineup changes, starting with a couple of different drummers until Jeremy Thompson came into the band in 1996-97, and Corey on bass being replaced with a number of other bass players, until Bonnie came into the band in 2012, replacing Karen. Lately, I've noticed Jeremy missing, and 9 Pound Hammer and Kentucky Bridge Burners drummer Rob Holzman on drums. Is Jeremy, who has been in the band since the late 90s, being replaced with Rob?
I think he's starting a family, man. But it's gotten better, but it's different, you know. But at the same time, you know, everyone misses that guy. There's no way around that, you know.
Yeah, no, I was just wondering, is he being replaced by Rob?
It's, you know, without anyone making any kind of decision, or I'm not about to burn any kind of bridge with Jeremy's, like, one of our favorite people in the world. I'm not going to burn a bridge professionally or personally with that guy. So, I mean, if he does, he's got lots of things working against him coming back, as far as, like, taking time off, because if things are going kind of crappy, I don't think you might want to for a little bit. Things are starting to get better again. It's like things are kind of crappy, and at some point you get tired of it, man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was like he was like, you know, basically we have to work harder, and we have to work our ass off just to, you know, because the way rock and roll is and the club is, and we have to work our ass off just to be in the position we were, you know, like 8-9 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and so he just wasn't up for that. Plus, he is married. His mom was dying, and he went and took care of her. And then, he's trying to start a family, and he needed to make money. And we weren't working steady enough, and we didn't have a lot of, or we didn't have management working on us getting some good. We had some.
besides this, we had the ZZ Top thing happen, and then some cool festivals, and we really didn't have a good gig for a while. We went like a while without having a decent gig. I mean, it was, it kind of sucked. I mean, we had way too much time off. We had problems, with the getting up the dosage together and everything else, and I just didn't, I think he was over it. But I know he misses it, but he had to get a regular job because his wife didn't want him to be gone that long. I mean, no, she didn't want him to be gone that long. So, and he, I don't think he wanted to be gone either. So, you know, it's, I know people still want to do it when they, if people ever quit or don't do it, like, you know, he said he's just taking some time off. But I know people always think, well, man, I wish I was still doing it, but it, you know, you got it, it takes more than just thinking. You know, Dad, you know, it's a lot of commitment and stuff, and we're back to playing a lot. And we're back to being committed again full-time, and our closest full-time is our people our age can do full-time. Now, we're home for 6 weeks, and, we got a little bit of personal life, but we're mostly, like, writing songs and getting our, you know, trying to get everything back together and trying to get, we had a few years of, like, I think, like, we're kind of coasting and partying and stuff and everything, and then we had some kind of way, I think everyone was kind of disappointed that a couple of things didn't take off like they should have, Jeremy was real close with Karen too, so I don't know, there was all that, so. And she just didn't feel like doing it anymore either. She didn't, I mean, Karen was very, 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 very complimentary about Bonnie. She thought Bonnie was perfect, and she was, loved it.
She
kind of saw us.
I mean,
she was
I,
very, very cool.
Yeah.
About it. And, Rob and Jeremy know each other, and there's no ill hard feelings or anything. But to answer your question, I don't really know. If he does come back, it's not going to be anytime real soon, because at this point, I mean, Rob's been in like a year and a half.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking.
And hard work, and yeah. Rob's gonna get the next record. I mean, things that got kicked up a notch as far as the dynamics, and it's like a new band in a way, which is kind of like God, and because we didn't have, I mean, there's a bunch of people we played with the Horton Heat, a lot of areas of the country. We opened up a Horton Heat recently. I mean, some areas knew us as well as they did him, and some did not. I mean, we were playing some crowds that, man, they were not. I was like, we were a new band to them. And I was like, wow. And there was even like a review of us that says something like, Nashville Pussy, a bright spot on the musical horizon. Like, they're like, something you give like a band of kids. And I was just like, all right, man. That's all. I mean, seriously, I was like, well, okay, if we're new, that's fine. That's good. You know, it's better than saying those bunch of old fuckers.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it turns people on.
A new band.
Yeah.
A new band. So, yeah, and it's, there's a certain aspect of the show and stuff, and I think everyone just got better and scenes got better. And we've got got so much material we could do, too, for all those records that, and everyone's just so, I mean, I think Bonnie and Rob are like more concentrated musicians they are probably musicians first. It's like, you know, and so is Ryder. Corey or Adam Neal, me to a certain degree, and especially Karen. We're just like cool people that happen to play instrument. We're cool and we're smart and stuff. And we play an instrument. We took it serious enough that we can be in the band and play good enough. But, you know, I mean, yet they're not, we don't have the, I don't have the musical concentration. Like, I mean, Rob and Bonnie are very, and they're not boring, but they're professional as shit. They just got their shit together and they can be in different situations. And, you know, Ryder could too. Ryder could do all kinds of different stuff. And basically, you know, only bands I can be in are the ones I form. I mean, that's why no one's going to hire me for anything else, I don't think.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard it all. There ain't no more. Stay tuned for next week. And to all of you, goodbye, good riddance, and well, you all know the rest. There you go.